and gentlemen. Did you know there were no gas chambers during the Second World War in Germany? And that there were no juice skin lampshades and no pure fat soap? I bet you've heard those stories, though, haven't you? They've been drummed into you time and time again on the Hitler Channel and in your schools. And everywhere you go, anytime you meet a Jew, believe you me, you get reminded of these lies. Such serious lies that are designed to demoralize the white race, and especially the Germans, just exactly as Prime Minister of Iran, Ahmed Ahmadinejad says, these lies were perpetrated against us, and we go to jail if we confront these lies, exactly as Galileo almost was burned at the stake because he dared to say, to disagree with the church. The church said that the earth was the center of the universe. And Galileo said, no, the earth revolves around the sun. The church, the Bible is incorrect. So all these people who dared to speak the truth in the Middle Ages, these scientists, were burned at the stake. The wonderful thing about Galileo, however, is that he was such a fine man, such a diplomatic man, that he saved his own life. So what we're struggling for here at this time in history is for someone to come along and not get arrested. But in the meantime, a moment to reflect on those of us who have been arrested for questioning these hideous lies perpetrated against our mothers and fathers and grandparents, specifically designed to see to it that we don't have any white children. Robert Farrison, age 76, was convicted in France of Holocaust denial because he published the results of forensic tests he did of the walls of alleged gas chambers, which showed that there was no cyanide residue consistent with Zyklon B, and dared to say so in Iran. Here's a Frenchman who went out of his country where it's against the law to protest these lies, spoke on Iranian TV the truth about tests he did on the walls of the gas chambers, and when he came back to his home country of France, they convicted him at the age of 76 of Holocaust denial. We all know that Ernst Zundel was taken from his home in Virginia in the dark of night by several squad cars sent by our dear Jewish leader, Michael Chertoff, was put in solitary confinement for 18 months in Canada because he was considered a threat to Canada's national security. They have hate speech laws there, too. And then was deported to Germany, where he's been in jail pending his trial, which is now ongoing. The judge refuses to let Ernst Zundel bring the Iranian president, Ahmadinejad, to testify to what he knows about the fact that there were no gas chambers. The reason? You're not allowed to prove that there were no gas chambers in a German court, because that would be in itself a breach of the law against questioning the Holocaust. Germar Rudolph, another more young, he looks to be in about his 40s or maybe early 50s, very handsome young man, also taken out of his home in the United States where he was living with his American wife, and has either been convicted or is now facing charges of hate speech also in Germany, because he also concluded that there was no Zyklon B in the residue of the gas chambers. Hence, there were no gas chambers, no gassing. Arthur Butz wrote a very wonderful book that we all should have on our shelf called The Hoax of the 20th Century, in which he proved that this is the biggest hoax of the 20th century, these lies about the gas chambers. And he was quoted in the news as saying the alleged slaughter of millions of Jews by the Germans during World War II did not happen. He dared to say that January 25th, 2006. Michael Hoffman, an Idaho-based Holocaust denier and conspiracy theorist, termed the Holocaust, quote, a religious cult masquerading as history, unquote, and, quote, a means of Judaizing the West. I will also quickly mention Frederick Tobin, who says that Auschwitz was a transit camp and was convicted in Germany even though he wasn't present for his trial, he lives in Australia. Paul Frome is presently fighting it out with the Canadians because he seasoned his comments on the Holocaust lies with traditional stereotypes about Jewish control of the media and government. So if you say that the Jews are in control of the media and government in Canada, you're guilty of using stereotypes. So now even using stereotypes is a crime, and if you say something negative about Jews, you're guilty of using stereotypes. So that's the state of things, and now we're looking at this new military law where the police can come and take us away to Guantanamo and without a trial or without any representation, and there's no right to habeas corpus. But are we really surprised? Have we not seen this exact kind of improper treatment being perpetrated on Americans? For example, Jermar Rudolph and Zundel were both taken out of their homes in America where they were living with their American wives. They were given kangaroo court trials, and they were whisked out of the country. So this is not new. It's just being put down in black and white. The fight goes on. We are still fighting against the forces of deceit, murder, theft. And which side do you want to be on? Do you want to be on the side of the people who bomb Lebanon and put several generations of Palestinians in concentration camps, subjecting the young adolescent males to rape by these perverted Jews? Or do you want to fight them? We don't have much choice. We just have to keep doing what we're doing. This has been the struggle since 9/11. The more we raise our voice, the more we get ourselves heard, the more likely we are to win. The worst thing we could do at this point is to be quiet. I'm sensing more and more people understanding the truth. 86% of Americans no longer believe the lies that the government has told us about 9/11. There is going to be a tidal wave crashing on the American psyche when the truth about these gas chambers is known. It's going to be the biggest intellectual catastrophe in the history of the world, except possibly for the Reformation, which we are kind of part of, where people were allowed to read the Bible for the first time in history in the Middle Ages, and they saw, lo and behold, it didn't say anything like what they were taught. Jesus was a man of love. He wasn't a magician who flew physically into the air, and if you didn't believe it, you were supposed to be burned at the stake. That's the last thing he ever would have wanted. And many Protestants were persecuted bitterly for demanding their right to speak and love the true God that was revealed by Jesus. But that's how important this issue is. Are we going to live lives of deceit, or are we going to live lives of the truth? Now, in June of this year, the Pope asked God in prayer why he tolerated the Holocaust. Well, the answer is, he didn't only tolerate it, he mandated it. You see, there was no Holocaust to apologize for. What there was Adolf Hitler, the only man in history, except for Jesus Christ, who stood up as powerfully against the forces of deceit and said, "My people will live. My people are to survive." Jesus was very similar to Hitler in that he too was trying to save the white race from extinction. At that time and in that place in history, the white race was just a little raggle-taggle group of destroyed people who'd been taken into captivity in Babylon and Syria because they were intermarrying with other races. And the Bible is very specific that you, ancient Israelites, who are the Western European white people, are not allowed to intermarry with the other people around you, the blacks, the browns, the yellows, and the mixed race, says, because if you do, the recessive nature of your genes will exterminate you as a race. And the Israelites fell prey to the forces of nature and did intermarry, and did find their children getting confusion of faith and confusion of thought and being put into captivity and taken off and made slaves, where they intermarried even worse. So that when they came back from Babylon captivity, Jesus, who was a Greek man with Greek blood, white European blood, not what we see today in Greece, but what you see in the statues of the Parthenon, these beautiful, handsome men and women, this was the type of man Jesus was genetically, and he felt it imperative that he explain to these mongrels who were coming back from captivity in Babylon that they had to go back to what the Bible taught, one of which was you can't worship a god of hate, you can't sacrifice animals to the god of hate, much less your children, much less people. And he never said specifically that I'm aware of that you can't intermarry, but it's very clear by the way he treats the Samaritan woman that he was here only for the children, the lost children of Israel. And even though he blessed the Samaritan woman who was of the Edomite race, the evil, darker races that crucified him because she was so faithful, he told her that he shouldn't be doing this for her because he was sent only to save and rescue the lost tribes of Israel, which is the white Western European race. So we have Jesus Christ as our prime example of the Savior of our race, and all others, of course, who understand what he's trying to say, which is not many of them, because it takes brains to understand that if you want to live and create a beautiful civilization, you're going to have to live honestly and kindly. We are not animals, and we could never build the buildings, the castles, and the museums and churches that you see throughout Europe, many of which we bombed, if you didn't have a whole civilization that was based on Christian principles of being honest and fair with one another. So, did you know, I'm sure you do, that Jesus Christ is the man who, about whom more has been written than any other man in history? There have been more books published, more pages written, more words spoken about Jesus Christ than any man in history. Guess who's in second place? It's Adolf Hitler. He is the second most written about man in history, second only to Jesus Christ. And isn't it interesting that his mission was so similar to that of Jesus's, to rehabilitate the white race and protect it from becoming extinct? So, another thing about Hitler that's nice is that he refused to use international Jewish currency. And he said no to the World Bank of Jews when they tried to get him to pay interest and said, we're not going to pay you the interest we owe you because you are liars and thieves. And furthermore, we're going to print our own money. So he actually printed, what's it called, the Reichmark, I believe, and distributed it freely to the people, starting with the construction men that he had build the Autobahn and various buildings in Germany. And Germany's fortunes rose through the sky, through the ceiling, because that's how you should run a country. You shouldn't be paying interest on paper just because somebody has a printing press and calls themselves the international bankers, which is what we're doing and why we're in so much debt. The government has the right under the Constitution to print its own money. And doesn't that make sense? And then you just distribute it, and it takes on a value having to do with the various values of the goods and services it's being used to procure. Or, I believe that the Constitution says our money is supposed to be backed by gold and silver. But that's not the main issue. The main issue is that we should not be paying interest to international bankers, which is what's running our Federal Reserve Bank, just for the privilege of having money printed. We can print our own money and not charge the taxpayers interest. And that's what Hitler was doing. So that's another one of the reasons that they went after Hitler, and they also went after JFK on that count, and they also went after Abraham Lincoln on that count. Abraham Lincoln was printing what he called greenbacks and told the Federal Reserve, or whoever was the progenitor of the Federal Reserve, that he simply was not going to let them print our money. Jackson was another man. Andrew Jackson had a very similar attitude toward the World Bank. I mean, why, when you think of it, would I pay 10 cents to you to print money when I can buy my own printing press. And that's exactly what we're doing. Now, there's more to this horrible hoodwink, the way the Jews have hoodwinked us. There's even more horror to it. Not only are we having our people exploited to pay interest to them because they have a printing press, and every time we need money, they print it and we pay them interest, but the money is going for a terrible, terrible purpose, and it really does not serve capitalism at all. Capitalism is a beautiful theory. I mean, and it works, too, if you adhere to it. Under capitalism, if I can build a better mousetrap than you can, people are going to buy my mousetrap instead of yours, and I'm going to make more money than you. That's called competition. And that's a very healthy, necessary motivation to get people to invent new things. Competition, the spirit of competition, is very, very much a part of the human soul, at least the white man's soul. We fight in ball games. We fight. We have teams in high school that fight with each other, and we get up and we scream, our team is better, and we work hard to make it true. That's competition. I don't know what the lower races are like. I don't know if they have a spirit of competition or if they're just grazers. But you don't want to do anything to squelch the spirit of competition in the white man. And that's why we believe in capitalism. But our country is not capitalistic. Because what's happening in our country is that the taxpayers are paying a huge amount of their money to the government, who then subsidizes whatever businesses they think should be subsidized. Most of the large corporations are subsidized. It isn't a question of a guy with a good idea proving his mettle and inspiring people to buy his product. It's who can get a hold of Congress and convince the Congress that the money of the taxpayer should go to his business. This is not capitalism. In fact, this is communism. And what kind of corporations do you think we're sending our money to? We're sending our money to war machines. Our country, now that we have the internet, has been engaging in a terrible form of imperialism. I totally support imperialism. Well, I don't totally support it, but there is a very good argument for imperialism, where you spread the word of Christianity throughout the darker nations and give everybody a chance to understand that they will live better lives if they learn self-discipline and diplomacy, which is what Christianity teaches. Even then, there's a good argument that you shouldn't do it, because why should you sacrifice the lives of your missionaries who get eaten in stew pots by natives who are not appreciative? So I'm not a completely on the side of imperialism. I would certainly never subject anyone to being eaten alive by cannibals. But on the other hand, if you can protect your people, isn't it a beautiful idea to go into the dark nations of the world and spread a better way to live? So in that sense, I think that imperialism is a beautiful thing. But that's not what we are spreading. What we as Americans have been spreading since at least the Second World War is an exploitation of the other nations, the Third World, where we go in and bribe whoever's in command, like the dictator or the king or whoever happens to be in authority. We give him money and we say, we have money from our taxpayers. We have the power to take money from our taxpayers, and we want to use it to build a beautiful city here for us. We want to build an opera house. We want to build a subway. We want to be able to come here and recreate for recreation, and at the same time, we will loan you the money to pay to us to do this for you. We will not take care of your poor. We won't do anything intelligent. We're not really spreading the light of civilization. What we're doing is trying to create buildings, because we have to do something with the taxpayers' money, and that's what we'd like to do. We'd like to build a little center in your city called Americana. And that's what we've been doing. Now, mostly the potentates and the dictators have agreed to do this because we pay them a lot of money. We send in people to negotiate these deals, and they say, okay, I will indebt my people to America so many dollars I will borrow the money from you, and then you can come in with your corporations, and we will pay your corporations in the future for what you're going to do to change the face of our nation. If the man in charge refuses to do that because he can see that it's a scam, and Hitler was one of these people, and I think Noriega was also one, if they stand up to the American government, then we send in jackals and we assassinate the dictator, put in another dictator, and go back to negotiating. And if the jackals can't assassinate him, as in the case of Panama and Iraq, we bomb their country, and we use the taxpayers' money to do that. And that's what is how evil American imperialism has been prior to the advent of the computer, when people, good Americans who have been loyally paying their taxes, trusting our government, have learned that the tax money is going to an evil purpose. It's not serving anybody. It's bombing countries and killing people. So we are not happy as a people now that we know that, and especially because Iraq was done right in front of our faces. We actually saw the pictures. We've seen what depleted uranium does to the babies who are born with terrible, terrible birth defects, and we don't want to do it anymore. So naturally, the government's getting very nervous and is passing laws. You know, Congress, they don't have any backbone. You know what it takes to be a congressman? It takes a person who knows how to get along. I know, because I went to one of these clubs once. I went to the Glendale Kiwanis Club, which is the most important club to belong to in Glendale, and when I passed the bar, someone told me to join, so I did. I'm telling you, the level of fear in those luncheons was so high, even in myself. All any of us wanted to do was to behave properly. It's like a very intimidating setting, a formal luncheon every week, and they've got their little game that they play. You get up and have speakers and shows. And I'm telling you, the people who don't know the score, who haven't been there 20, 30 years, all they want to do is behave properly. And if they do behave properly, then they get put into office, and then their only job is to continue to behave properly so they can stay in office. The job of the politician is to stay in office, just like the job of the judge is to not have people file complaints against him, which will be overturned by the Supreme Court, appellate court. That's all the judge is thinking about when he's sitting on the bench. And so when a lawyer comes in who doesn't know what they're doing, a young lawyer comes in and a senior lawyer, you better believe that the judge is not going to be very comfortable finding for the inexperienced lawyer, because he knows that the political power is on the side of the more experienced lawyer, so he's going to make the inexperienced lawyer appeal, not the experienced lawyer. So there's always this political magnetism going on, and it's especially true among politicians. All their lives, probably since they were little children, these politicians have been looking from side to side, wondering what's the right dress to wear, what's the right thing to say, who's the right mate to have, and they carry it right on into Congress. So you better believe when George Bush says, I want you to sign this, and they've been under the influence of AIPAC, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee, who pays them a lot of our taxpayer money, which we give to Israel every year. It's in way over $3 billion. I keep hearing people say, oh, we shouldn't give $3 billion to Israel. The last time I was able to get the information on the Internet was 3 years ago. It was up to $19 billion that year. And now, you know, they know how to break the links, and we're not able to get the information anymore. $19 billion 3 years ago. It's probably up to $20 billion a year now. Well, that money gets put into American Treasury bills, and the interest of that money, when you're talking about $20 billion, you're talking about a lot of money, gets distributed around to the men and women in Congress for their campaigns. And these men and women are very, very heavily influenced by Israel. So they hear all these Israelis telling them how nice Jews are and how bad gas chambers are and how bad white people with swastikas are and how if we want to have a good country, we're going to have to give the police the right to whisk bad people off to Guantanamo Bay. And I am telling you, the congressmen don't bat an eye. They don't have the kind of intellect that's necessary for critical thinking. They just don't have it. So they just, all they're trying to do is say, what is he trying to tell me, and how do I vote to make it seem like I know what he's talking about? That's how these people think. That's why Hitler made the entire parliament go home after the Reichstag fire, which was set by Jews, communists, not by Hitler himself, another famous fable that they'll tell you. He was able to get into power because it was such a catastrophe. And he just went right into Congress, or whatever is the proper name in Germany, and he said, all you guys are going home right now, or I'm going to put you in jail. And he just kicked them out because they were all under the influence of the Jews, just like ours are. And if we ever get a hero of the stature of Hitler, I guarantee you that's what will happen, because we can't have people in Congress who don't have the capacity for critical thinking. Now, let's talk about the ACLU. The ACLU, the American, whatever, ACLU, something about Civil Liberties Union. The American Civil Liberties Union is run by Jews, and I know that personally because my girlfriend worked there as a temporary secretary, and she said, Mona, did you know that all of the contributions come from Russia? No, I didn't. Yeah, and they send their lawyers around to our local communities, like right here in Glendale. They sent a little communist-looking lawyer, could have been a very, very pretty woman with sensible hair and low shoes and no makeup, and she told our council that we could not continue to give money to the Boy Scouts because it was against the Constitution to support an organization that didn't hire homosexuals. So our men here in Glendale said, okay, we'll live without your gosh darn government support. We're not going to take in homosexuals, which, of course, was the right thing to do. So now we're finding out in the news that in Newark, New Jersey, a Bible camp counselor and a Boy Scout leader were among 125 people arrested nationwide in an Internet child pornography case in which subscribers purchased photos and videos of children engaged in sex acts with adults. One of the little boys that was photographed in a sadomasochistic manner was 6 months old. Apparently they took they must have taken a little 6-month-old boy and thought it was cute to put little handcuffs on him and a little whip and things like that. Anyway, it's totally horrible, and this is what you get from a Boy Scout leader and a Bible camp counselor. Now, we know from what we've learned in the Catholic Church, and Hitler taught us that when you have priests who are not allowed to have sex, you have a high possibility of homosexual activity. That's why Hitler put Catholic priests in the gas chambers. There were no gas chambers. In the concentration camps. He punished Catholic priests when he caught them molesting children. And he had a lot of discussions with Rome about this, and he convinced the Vatican that he was right and that these priests should not be allowed to be free. And the Vatican actually supported Hitler because they preferred Hitler's policies to those of communist Russia, and they saw Hitler as a hero because he was fighting against the Russians, where the Jewish Bolsheviks and their minions, many of them real white people, who were easily misled, just as we see in our country. A lot of our people are turning traitor under the influence of the Jews. So the Russians were burning up churches, and they were crucifying priests on the doors of these churches and doing really hideous things, committing really horrible atrocities. And given the choice, the Catholic Church preferred Hitler to Stalin. So that's why people now hate the Catholic Church and are saying, putting pressure on the Pope to publicly pray to God to ask him why did he allow the Holocaust. You know, I hope we really come up with an answer. I hope people say, you want the answer to your prayer, Pope? The answer to your prayer is that God mandated the Holocaust, you stupid idiot. There were no gas chambers, and somebody had to support Hitler because Hitler was trying to save the white race of all civilization against the impending takeover by the Jewish communists, who are animals and freaks and mongrels and commit worse atrocities than anybody we've ever seen in all history anywhere in the world. But until then, right now, the Jews are suing the Catholic Church. For what? Let me think. I can't remember. I'll think of it. Oh, yes. For supporting Hitler's people in Poland and helping them escape the takeover by the communists, where they would surely be tortured to death. And they are demanding the right to make the Vatican cough up all of their secret records, which the church is doing, which is the right thing to do, and they're not going to find anything. The reason they're doing this is because they go from party to party to party, from the church to Switzerland to IBM. Anybody with money gets sued by the Catholic Church because their lawyers are so good at racking up expenses that it's actually cheaper to settle with them than to go through the process of discovery. And that's a fact. Hard to believe, but true. When you're asked by a judge to bring forth all of your records, and you are the country, the nation of Switzerland, you're facing billions of dollars of work in attorney fees and clerk fees, because they have to classify all this stuff and present it and copy it. So at one point, the Jews sued Switzerland, and Switzerland settled for $1.25 billion, because it was going to cost more than that to drag out all of their records for the last 100 years, 60 years, and prove that they didn't have any Jewish gold, which they didn't. They were completely innocent. But the state of Switzerland correctly determined that it was cheaper to pay off the Jews, than go through the litigation, because the Jews are experts at abusing the litigation process. They did it to IBM as well, and IBM settled for $2.3 billion. Their beef against IBM was that IBM had manufactured the computers. They weren't like today's computers, but they were old-fashioned computers that you could punch in a number and save information, and they were saving information on all of the prisoners, their address, their age, their state of health, when they came into which camp, when they transferred to which camp, when they were released, and why. All this information was kept on key punch cards, which corresponded to the numbers that were tattooed on the arms of the Jews. So the Jews decided that because there were gas chambers, IBM had to be sued for providing these computers to Hitler. And I understand that they're now suing a train company. And it's always the same story. It's easier and cheaper to settle than it is to litigate. So now they're going after the Catholic Church. And you might like to know that they're going into Congress and asking Congress to allocate them benefits to the Holocaust survivors, because Congress didn't do enough for them when they were in Germany. And they are demanding equal medical benefits to our military at a time when our military isn't even given enough adequate medical benefits. The Jews are saying, we should have the right to go into any Veterans Administration and get complete medical care, because we were so badly let down by America during the Second World War. The Hungarian Jews are suing the USA for $10,000 each, because when the Russians started confiscating personal property like artwork and silverware and beautiful things, you know how beautiful the Germans are when they do their home appurtenances, like furniture and artwork and tablecloths and stuff. And the Russians were going to come in and take it all, and the Americans took it instead, saving it for posterity. Well, the survivors allege that because they're Jews and that the Germans are bad people, all that stuff belongs to them. And because America didn't distribute all of that stuff to the Jews, they're now suing in a class action suit against the United States for $10,000 each for not giving them this personal property and this art and this silverware, et cetera. So it goes on, and you end up always seeing the Jews with no moral values, bringing us back to Hitler's original statement and Jesus' original statement that civilized people have to separate themselves from the animal races, or there isn't going to be any animal, there isn't going to be any civilization. There is just going to be what's left after the locusts have devoured everything in the field. So locusts, in this case, being the Jews, and it's the field is our beautiful cities, which are being destroyed. I'd like to tell you that I see Christianity perverted by Judaism so badly that I think it needs to be discussed. Judaism teaches that after a horrific world war in which everyone except a few Jews are killed, their Messiah will come and rule the world. Now, isn't it interesting that that's what Revelation teaches Christians, that there's going to be a horrific world war after which, what is it, 118,000 good Christians get to live, and then Jesus comes and rules over us. This is too similar, in my opinion, to be believed. Jesus never talked about coming to back and killing everybody in the world except good people. Jesus was very clear that only good people get to go to heaven. But, and that's true, obviously. You're not going to progress in your cosmic life after this life if you haven't been a good person, because we believe that the world, the cosmos, the universe is built on spiritual principles where virtue is rewarded, that God is good, and therefore we are good, so that we can align ourselves with the will of God and move forward as we go on from this life to the next. And we are right. This is obvious. Many prophets have taught us this. Jesus taught us this. And as he said, other prophets have taught us this too. God is a God of love. But what of a God that rewards you for torturing animals on an altar so that it's full of blood, and you have to do it slowly so that the animal really suffers a lot? Then this God will reward you, because that's the kind of guy he is. That's what makes him happy. That's what makes him feel like loving you. If you bring a live being, especially a beautiful one, that's innocent and pure and healthy, and cut it halfway into its throat so the blood drains from his throat, and he has to lay there on an altar. Christian altars don't have blood on them, ladies and gentlemen. Christian altars are quiet, serene places where we have flowers and candles. But the Islam people and the Jewish people actually sacrifice real living animals on their altars so that the altars are covered with blood. To this day, on Passover, the Jews in Israel will take a chicken and swing it around the head of the sinner three times and say, "I take all of your sins and put them into this chicken." And the poor chicken is getting swung around by its feet, and then they cut the chicken's head halfway through, and if the chicken dies, they have to do it with another chicken, because it has to live through the entire exsanguination process. Otherwise, God is not pleased. This is not the same God that Jesus revealed. This is not the God that Jesus gave his life revealing. This is the devil, or evil, or the other thing besides God. So why are we allowing Jews and Muslims and practitioners of voodoo into our precious civilization where they are following orders from this devil God who teaches them to commit sins if you want to get ahead? The more murder you do, the more this God is pleased. The more you rape children, the more you're going to make this God happy. This God simply cannot be tolerated in white Western Christianity, and we must not tolerate it, and we've got to raise our consciousness above the level of tolerating everybody to distinguishing and discriminating between what is good and evil, starting with what Jesus taught us. If you don't have enough soul in your heart to know the difference between good and evil, start somewhere. Start with Jesus. He made it very clear. Blasphemy and murder and stealing and slander is not going to help you. God will not be pleased. You have to learn to be kind and loving and fair and honest in your business dealings and kind to your servants and all of the people who are dependent on you. That's the difference between good and evil. Why is it so hard for people to understand that there is a difference between good and evil? And yet many people today will tell you there's no difference between good and evil except as it is perceived. Well, in a sense, that's right. In a way, you could say that. If Satan, and I'm just using the term allegorically because I don't believe in Satan, but if this strange thing that these Jews and Islam people and voodoo people in Africa and South America have manufactured tells them that it's good to steal and rape and murder, then they should do that somewhere else because we don't want them doing it to us. And if we're going to have a civilization in which nobody steals and murders and rapes and burglarizes, the worst thing we could do is say, come on in if you believe in doing these things because we're all completely undefended. We're all loving everybody. So if your God tells you that you should come in and kill us, hey, come on in. And do you know that there are people that actually think that that is what Jesus taught and that under the influence of this Jewish twist, just the way we've been hammerlocked with our Christian ideals to forgive people, we're forgiving people before they even commit the crime. But God made it very clear, and Jesus taught us that God made it very clear that, yes, you can be forgiven, but there's something that comes first, and it's called repentance. And then if you repent of a sin, you don't get forgiven just 7 times, but 70 times 7 times. And doesn't that make sense? That if you've got a problem that you keep doing over and over, in my case, I've always been fat all my life. It's mainly genetic, but there's a lot of laziness involved, and I have to fight it every day of my life. You would have to be forgiving me 70 times 7 times if you wanted to be my friend because I keep committing the sin. But I'm trying, so I'm worthy of forgiveness. But if I didn't try, if I went around and stole food from your houses and made your kids go hungry, then I shouldn't be forgiven. We're forgiving these people before they even come into our house, before they even come into our country and say, we understand you. You can't help being a mestizo that doesn't have any brains and is just genetically programmed to killing our kids. It's okay because God said that we should forgive, so we're going to forgive you. Forget about the necessity for repentance. That's just a terrible, terrible mistake. We need to have high standards in civilization. And not let even people inside the city gates, unless they indicate that they are sincere about expressing themselves in Christian terms, in Christian values, or at least ethical values. And you don't have to go get esoteric to understand what I mean by ethical values. Hindus, for instance, believe in good as opposed to evil. They believe that the universe rewards you if you're good. I would allow Hindus into my country, but I would not allow Jews or Muslims, or voodoo people into my country, because they believe that God will reward them if they torture things. And what was Jesus doing in that temple, by the way? You know, just before he got crucified, and this is the reason he was crucified. He went into the temple, and he grabbed a whip out of the hands of these money changers who were selling these little paraphernalia for their sacrifices, and one of the things that they sold was whips. And the reason that they sold whips was because it was part of the Jewish religious practice for the fathers to whip their adolescent males to punish them for their sins. I mean, doesn't that just make perfect sense to you when you consider the Jewish personality that that is something they would do? Well, and that is what they did. They're doing that to this day, too, in certain remote areas. They are still flagellating their adolescent males to celebrate Passover and other holidays. So Jesus grabbed the whip and he started beating these guys who were selling these rams and these ducks and these chickens and goats and things. And he had a hissy fit. Why shouldn't he? And so the word he said is, this is my father's house, you've made of it a den of thieves. But it wasn't just a den of thieves, it was a den of murderers and torturers and beaters of children. The whole temple had been consecrated to evil. And Jesus, who believed that he was God and that he was going to take care of things and make it right, went into Jerusalem on that donkey. I'm sure that he thought that everybody was going to just say, "Hail Jesus, gosh, thank God you're here." And then he went into that temple and he just blew it, just put totally crazy on him. And many 33-year-old men might do something like that if they were just totally geared up to saving the world and they saw the sacrifices in the temple. And then he turned over the tables and he let the animals go and he drove the oxen, the cows, right out of the temple. What was he saying? Was he saying animals should be treated well? No. Was he saying little boys should be treated well? No. He was saying, this is not God. This is not the way to worship God. God does not like this. It's not his true personality. You have taken God and you've put something else in here, an evil demon that has no place in my Father's house. That's what you have to understand about Jesus' passion. It was his love for God, not his concern for people, although he had that, but it was his strong love for God that made him go berserk in front of everybody and say, I won't have this done to my Father. You cannot practice this way in his house. You can't slander him in that way. And that is why they crucified him 3 days later, because he was protesting against this hideous Satan worship. So they said to themselves, oh, he thinks he can come and overturn our God. He thinks he's bigger than our God. We will make of him a sacrifice. And it was on Passover day that he was crucified, taken down off of the cross at 3 p.m., which is the time and date that they hold their slaughter sessions. And they undoubtedly took his body, probably still alive, in my opinion, because they have to kill you on their altar. So it is my belief that the reason they didn't break his legs was because then he wouldn't be a fit sacrifice for Satan. They took him off of the cross, they bled him, they killed him, and they served him up with their matzo balls, just as they are doing to our children to this day. Only last week, 5 children were found in Russia with their bodies burned so that you couldn't see how they died. But the autopsies showed that all 5 of these children had been exsanguinated. And this isn't the only time the Jews have done this. This has been going on for centuries. Why would Jesus be any different? Then these Jews somehow get St. Paul to determine that this was a good thing that they did to Jesus. And you get burned at the stake if you ever say that the Jews did this to him, because he didn't get eaten for Passover dinner. He rose physically and bodily into heaven. So this was all God's will. It was all a beautiful, beautiful allegory about raising from the dead and mastering death, etc. Well, he did raise from the dead, and he did master death, and he did appear to his apostles. But his physical body ended up in the bellies of Jews. I am absolutely convinced of that. And this is what we need to remember, and this is what we need to bring forward, because for 2,000 years, this secret has been repressed. And you got burned at the stake if you dared to say that anything happened to his body except physically going into heaven, because the Jews know that this insult is going to be too great for anyone to bear. And when this insult is remembered, then we will have to face all of the little blonde children that have been killed and crucified throughout all of the thousands of years that we know about, their bodies found on Judenstein, which means Jewish altar stone, in the Black Forest and other places, some of them made saints. And it's still going on. The Muslims swear to us that they are still doing this to Muslims. And I'm sure it's true. So I think that we should take Jesus up on his request when he gave the Last Supper, and we should remember this. You know how he says, take and eat, this is my body, this is my blood, do this in remembrance of me? I think we need to remember this. I think we should never forget that Jesus Christ was sacrificed to Satan by hideous Jews, and that we should put a stop to it. Because if we don't, then the entire race is going to die. We have to stand up for the truth, and we have to stand up for goodness. We have to stand up for our God, who is good and who is love. Or it's possible that the love of God could be extinguished on this planet forever. And that would be a betrayal of Jesus, who gave so much so that people like you and me could understand that God is not a cruel and savage man or being, but a loving and kind being that rewards virtue. And all we have to do is be virtuous and enjoy a virtuous life in order to be rewarded both here on earth and in heaven. So, let us get back to Sabbatai Zevi. Sabbatai Zevi was a Jewish mystic who claimed that he was the Jewish Messiah in 1726, and that after this huge world war took place in which 9/10 of the people would be killed, he would rule the world, that he was the Messiah that the Jews had been waiting for. And don't forget to notice the parallel between this Messiah and the Messiah that we are taught in Revelation is going to come back and rule after we diligently kill 9/10 of the world. This is ridiculous. This is, cannot possibly be God's will. This is Judaism being superimposed on Christianity once again. So we keep seeing these Jewish people coming back, claiming to be the Messiah, setting us up for this grand world war. And doesn't it just suit their purposes perfectly? They sell the war machine. They've got our money. We're paying taxes so that they can teach us how to kill off 9/10 of the human population. And then they can rule the world. And this is ridiculous and this is wrong. So people blame the environmentalists and they say, well, you're trying to kill off 9/10 of the human population because you believe in population control, so you're the bad guy. But no, it's not the environmentalists that is the bad guy. The environmentalists are the last people in the world to promote any kind of war, because the environmentalists are trying to preserve the environment. A war destroys the environment. The environmentalists are trying to point out that, yes, we have too many people on the planet for the amount of living space that we have and the water and the oxygen and the plant life that we need to sustain our lives. And we need to start controlling our birth rate, using our brains to control our birth rate. That's not asking too much, is it? But they've got it all twisted in the movement. All the Christians have it all twisted. That's the environmentalists, because they dare to interfere with being fruitful and multiplying. Therefore, they must be the satanic people, and they're causing all the wars. No. If you drop a bomb, especially an atomic bomb, on a country, you blow more of the environment than by doing anything else. That's the last thing you can do. You radiate the water. So you create a situation where there is no ecostructure left, and you have to lower the population more and more and more and more, which is not what we're trying to do. We need to use our common sense and balance the human population with the amount of living space and arable land and water that's available, which would probably be about a billion people if you want everyone to live like a Renaissance king, or 5 billion people if you want everybody to struggle. But we simply cannot support 14 billion. And the last I counted, it was up to 9, and we're doubling every 30 years. So again, the enemy is not the intelligentsia who's saying, can we please be stewards of the earth, as it tells us to in the Bible, and be careful with our land and not have so many people that we're all starving to death? These are not the enemy. The enemy is this war machine that we're supporting with our tax dollars. And the answer is to get on the internet and continue to be keyboard commandos. Raise your voice, get on the microphone, pay money to Hal Turner. I'd sent in my tithes today, and hopefully as you listen and as you make phone calls, which is the beginning part of your learning process, is when you start making telephone calls to people like me who are on the microphone and putting your 2 cents. Because what we need is not a country full of frightened people who are shy. We need strong Christian soldiers who, with practice, have learned to be courageous in stating what they believe to be truth, because it is the truth that will set you free and nothing else. And what good is the truth if you're not telling the truth to the best of your ability? So send in your money. Get your phone calls out. If you're too shy, just keep doing the keyboard stuff. The answer to our problem is communication. Vibrant, vigorous debate. That is what the Jews fear. That's why they pass all these laws against free speech, because they fear it. So whatever is done to you, speak the truth. If you're called to the magistrate, as it tells you in the Bible, speak the truth. Don't worry about what you are going to say. Speak your truth diplomatically and politely to the judge, and you will probably be treated well. So that's what we need to do. We need to articulate our position. We need not to hide behind our fears. I'm not suggesting that anybody endanger themselves. I don't think you should. If you feel that you're on dangerous ground, back off. We don't need martyrs. We don't need any more people getting burned at the stake. We need Galileos. We need men and women who have learned to be diplomatic and powerful enough personally to say the truth without getting burned at the stake. So that's what I'm going to ask you to do. Be careful. Be cautious. Learn to speak as the Germans do, in question. That's how they communicate now, because that's okay in Germany. You're allowed to say, didn't somebody say something about the Holocaust being exaggerated? And those people don't go to jail, and I don't know the talent because I haven't learned it. Being an American, being protected by the First Amendment, I've been getting up screaming my lungs out as much as I possibly could, because I knew I could. But if they lower the boom on us, we're going to be able to deal with it. The point is, to the best of your ability, support the truth and tell the truth. So, what we have then, after Zabbatai Zvi comes along, is he says that he's the Messiah and he's going to kill off all the people in the world, and that's in 1626. And then Jacob Frank comes along in 1726 and says he's the incarnation of Zabbatai Zvi, also a Jew, and he's the Messiah that's going to kill off 9/10 of the world, and he's going to be the Messiah. And what you end up with is something called Frankism, which is a combination of Judaism and Christianity, which is what I think we're all hearing here with Judeo-Christianity. It's this strange concoction of, it's a good thing to have wars in Iraq because they don't believe in God and we have to kill off 9/10 of the world, and then Jesus is going to reward us by showing up and taking care of us for the rest of eternity. This is Frankism, and this is Christian Judaism or Judeo-Christianity, and it's a terrible apostasy. The truth is what you know already very well, because you just know it. It's good to be good and it's bad to be bad. And it takes courage and training and self-restraint to be good, and it's awful easy to be bad. I see that happening among old people today on the Internet, where they're going and communicating with each other and having sex. You know, the deal with the old people today is you have to wait 3 dates before you have sex. This is what the Jews have done to us. They've actually made us into sexual psychotics, where people have completely lost their sense of modesty and decorum, and are doing everything they can to prove that they don't have any inhibitions. Well, you're supposed to have inhibitions. And I'm so sorry to see this happening. Then the younger generation gets brought up by these people, and even their children are taught that this is the way to be, and that you should teach your daughter that she needs to be liberated, because God help her if she should ever not enjoy sex. Well, that's just all awfully crazy. And again, we see virtue as being discouraged, and virtue is being discouraged, and people are being encouraged to become sexual psychotic. We are not the only nation that's being treated this way by the Jews. They often proliferate Palestine with all kinds of pornography, hoping to demoralize that country. But Muslims are ahead of us, I'm afraid, on this issue, and they simply refuse to be perverted. So the pornography does no good in Palestine. But what a terrible mess it's made of the United States. And don't blame the Masons. They are not the ones that are at fault. The Jews, starting with the Rothschilds, intentionally infiltrated the Masons and have gotten a great deal of control and and are doing a lot of damage. But it's not the good-looking white boys, not the rich white men that are evil. Don't blame it on the Masons. And thank you very much for listening.
Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, to this evening's edition of The Holo Hoax.